mantra 9. Andham tamak pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato bhuya ivate tamo ya uvidyayam rataha. Those who engage in the culture of nascent activities shall enter in the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. Purport. This mantra offers a comparative study of vidya and avidya. Avidya, or ignorance, is undoubtedly dangerous, but vidya, or knowledge, is even more dangerous when mistaken or misguided. This mantra of Sri Ishopanishad is more applicable today than at any time in the past. And this was written by Prabhupada many, many years ago, and is probably even more applicable now than it was when he... So it seems to be becoming increasingly applicable. Page 64. I'll wait till you get settled so that you can know that...
It's text time. Some of the books are different than the others.
Uh-huh. Text 9, and we're in the first paragraph of the purport. Okay. Modern civilization has advanced considerably in the field of mass education, but the result is that people are more unhappy than ever before because of the stress placed on material advancement to the exclusion of the most important part of life, the spiritual aspect. As far as vidya is concerned, the first mantra has explained very clearly that the Supreme Lord is the proprietor of everything, and that forgetfulness of this fact is ignorance. The more a man forgets this fact of life, the more he is in darkness. In view of this, a godless civilization directed toward the so-called advancement of education is more dangerous than a civilization in which the masses of people are less, quote, educated, unquote. Of the different classes of men, karmis, jnanis, and yogis, the karmis are those who are engaged in the activities of sense gratification. In the modern civilization, 99.9% of the people are engaged in the activities of sense gratification under the flags of industrialism, economic development, altruism, political activism, and so on. All these activities are more or less based on satisfaction of the senses, to the exclusion of the kind of God consciousness described in the first mantra. In the language of the Bhagavad Gita 7:15, people who are engaged in gross sense gratification are mudhas, asses. The ass is a symbol of stupidity. Those who simply engage in the profitless pursuit of sense gratification are worshipping avidya, according to Sri Ishopanishad. And those who play the role of helping this sort of civilization in the name of educational advancement are actually doing more harm than those who are on the platform of gross sense gratification. The advancement of learning by a godless people is as dangerous as a valuable jewel on the hood of a cobra. A cobra decorated with a valuable jewel is more dangerous than one not decorated. In the Hari Bhakti Sudodaya 3.11.12, the advancement of education by a godless people is compared to decorations on a dead body. In India, as in many other countries, some people follow the custom of leading a procession with a decorated dead body for the pleasure of the lamenting relatives. In the same way, modern civilization is a patchwork of activities meant to cover the perpetual miseries of material existence. All such activities are aimed toward sense gratification. But above the senses is the mind, and above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. Thus, the aim of real education should be self-realization, realization of the spiritual values of the soul. Any education which does not lead to such realization must be considered avidya, or nations. And to culture such nations means to go down to the darkest region of ignorance. According to the Bhagavad Gita 2:42, 7:15, and 7:15, mistaken mundane educators are known as Veda Vada Rita and Mayaya Parita Jnana. They may also be atheistic demons, the lowest of men. Those who are Veda Vada Rita pose themselves as very learned in the Vedic literature, but unfortunately they are completely diverted from the purpose of the Vedas. In the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, it is said that the purpose of the Vedas is to know the personality of Godhead. But these Vedavadarita men are not at all interested in the personality of Godhead. On the contrary, they are fascinated by such fruitive results as the attainment of heaven. As stated in Mantra 1, we should know that the personality of Godhead is the proprietor of everything, and we must be satisfied with our allotted portions of the necessities of life. The purpose of all Vedic literature is to awaken this God consciousness in the forgetful living being, and this same purpose is presented in various ways in the different scriptures of the world for the understanding of a foolish mankind. Thus, the ultimate purpose of all religions is to bring one back to Godhead. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you. I left this in his house. But the Vedavadarita people, instead of realizing that the purpose of the Vedas is to revive the forgetful soul's lost relationship with the personality of Godhead, take it for granted that such side issues as the attainment of heavenly pleasure for sense gratification, the lust for which causes their material bondage in the first place, are the ultimate end of the Vedas. Page 66. Maybe, if you have the same book. Such people misguide others by misinterpreting the Vedic literature. Sometimes they even condemn the Puranas, which are authentic Vedic explanations for laymen. The Vedavadaratas give their own explanations of the Vedas, neglecting the authority of great teachers, acharyas. They also tend to raise some unscrupulous person from among themselves and present him as the leading exponent of Vedic knowledge. Such Vedavadaratas are especially condemned in this mantra by the very appropriate Sanskrit words, Vidyayam Rataha. Vidyayam refers to the study of the Vedas because the Vedas are the origin of all knowledge, Vidya. And Rataha means those engaged. Vidyaham Rataha thus means those engaged in the study of the Vedas. The so-called students of the Vedas are condemned herein because they are ignorant of the actual purpose of the Vedas on account of their disobeying the acharyas. Such Vedavadaratas search out meanings in every word of the Vedas to suit their own purposes. They do not know that the Vedic literature is a collection of extraordinary books that can be understood only through the chain of disciplic succession. Yeah. They do not know that the Vedic literature is a collection of extraordinary books that can be understood only through the chain of disciplic succession. One must approach a bona fide spiritual master in order to understand the transcendental message of the Vedas. That is the direction of the Mundaka Upanishad, 1:2:12. These Vedavadarata people, however, have their own acharyas, who are not in the chain of transcendental succession. Thus they progress into the darkest region of ignorance by misinterpreting the Vedic literatures. They fall even further into ignorance than those who have no knowledge of the Vedas at all. The Mayaya Parita Jnana class of men are self-made gods. Such men think that they themselves are God and that there is no need of worshipping any other god. They will agree to worship an ordinary man if he happens to be rich, but they will never worship the personality of Godhead. Such men, unable to recognize their own foolishness, never consider how it is that God can be entrapped by Maya, his own illusory energy. If God were ever entrapped by Maya, that's the main thing, the crux. This is the crux. If God were ever entrapped by Maya, Maya would be more powerful than God. Such men say that God is all-powerful, but they do not consider that if he is all-powerful, there is no possibility of his being overpowered by Maya. These self-made gods cannot answer all these questions very clearly. They are simply satisfied to have become God themselves. Now, I just wanted to say one thing about, you know, I'm going to make this very short, my comment, and then I want just to have a discussion and the assembled great saintly sages can give their comments. The thing that really grabbed me about this purport and this verse is that I heard Prabhupada say many times, actually, that the reason that the so-called knowledge is more dangerous even than the ignorance of just gross sense gratification is because the subtle body, in the subtle body, the intelligence is the rationalizing feature or the rationalizing factor. So when a person becomes very adept intellectually and rationalizes this last point of what is knowledge and what is not, and comes to the conclusion that they're God, or that's where it heads, actually. That's where it kind of concludes. If you follow it, the train of thought down to the last platform that you can get off at, you know, you come to this platform that they're God. So therefore, it's very, very dangerous. And it's even more dangerous because when a person has that kind of facility, it's very difficult to convince them otherwise because they're very kind of adept at arguing back, and they've thought it through. They're very thoughtful, and they've accumulated a lot of knowledge, and they can put that knowledge in such a way that whenever you give an argument, a simple, clear, clean argument for the Vedas, they have this way of, you know, screwing out some other meaning, and therefore it's very difficult, and therefore it's more dangerous. The person to get entangled in knowledge that is not really knowledge, but it is more subtle than the grosser types of knowledge, which appear to be more ignorant, but it's not. They become addicted, you know, like sense gratification. We get addicted to something, a drug or sex or, you know, some kind of form of movies or some form of sense gratification. But this is a more addictive kind of sense gratification, intoxication, getting intoxicated by your own intelligence. And this is why Devahuti asked the question to Kapiladev. If you remember in the beginning of that conversation, she said, "I can understand basically that we're not the body. It's pretty obvious. You know, you see the dead body in light." Anyway, she didn't say that, but I'm just elaborating. But she said, "But this idea that we're different than the intelligence and consciousness, the difference between intelligence and consciousness, see, this is too far above me. This is way past my ability to understand. I'm just a simple woman. And so how is that possible?" And then Kapiladev answered the first verse in answer. It was a long answer, but the first part of the answer, the first verse in response to that question was, "Yes, it is very difficult. And so therefore you must hear from an authoritative source very, very seriously and over a very long period of time." In other words, persons who are very addicted to this platform of the intelligence and very sophisticated in their so-called knowledge, they have to hear the truth, simple truth, you know, very seriously from a very deep, heavy person, realized person, over a long period of time before they can begin to see the difference between their intelligence and their consciousness. That's all I had to say.
I had some thoughts.
Please, think away. Oh, Muni.
Well, first when we were reading, I was thinking about how, you know, especially scientists now are into genetic manipulations and in vitro fertilization, and then creating fertilized embryos and then discarding the ones
that
they don't need or don't take. And so they're creating karmas that they couldn't create before because they didn't have the knowledge, you know. So I was thinking, and this is an example of where knowledge becomes more dangerous because it's more entangling, there's more karma, yet it's not knowledge at all, because Krishna defines knowledge when Arjuna, he asks Krishna, what is knowledge? And he says, knowledge is when one knows the field of activities and one knows the knower and one knows the difference. Mm-hmm. That's knowledge. And what material scientists are studying, they're just studying matter, and they're never coming to understand the knower of matter. Or the beginning spiritual platform, but they get more entangled in identification with matter. And so in this way, knowledge, so-called knowledge, is more dangerous, more entangling.
That stimulates my thought that in that section, in the verses where Krishna actually defines knowledge in the Gita in a more explicit way, detail of that list of things that are actually knowledge. And then at the end he said, and everything else except for this is ignorance. And what they are qualities of the soul, qualities of the spiritual person. So I think that that's a very important point also, that the evidence of whether or not we actually have knowledge is how we act and how we think and how we will in a way that brings us to the position that we're a servant of Krishna, not just that we're, you know, different than the body. Humility is the first on the list. And Prabhupada gave a lecture on it. And the title of it on the lecture is humility. The beginning of knowledge is humility. Or no, knowledge begins with humility. That's what he says. Knowledge begins with humility. And so that goes right back to what this verse is saying. If one is very proud, very intelligent, intellectual, and therefore, by dint of the accumulation of the reasoning power and the details of, you know, the material creation, they become very proud of that knowledge, then they become lost completely. And we can quote that verse from the Gita that Prabhupada is paraphrasing in different ways in Yamimam Pushpitam Bacham, Pravadanta Vipaschita, Veda, Vada, Ratapartha, Nanyat, Astiti Vadina, Kamat, Mana, Swargapada, Janma, Karma, Palapradam, Kriya, Vishesha, Bahulam, Bhogaishvarya, Gatim, Priti. Translation. Well, we could summarize it, but let's read it out. That's
42 and 43.
I'm not so good at the numbers. Yeah. Yamimam pushpitam bacham pravadantya vipaschitaha veda vada ratapartha nanyat astiti vadinaha kamat mana svargapada janma karma palapradam kriya vishesha bahulam bhogaishvarya gatim piti. Yamimam, all these, pushpitam, flowery, vacham, words, pravadanti, say, avipaschita, men with poor fund of knowledge. I just want to say, I have to say one more thing. Before I came a devotee, it was trendy to go and hear people speak that were such flowery speakers that you couldn't understand what they were saying. And we were thinking at the time, this person must be very much intelligent because I can't understand what they're saying. Let me go study them. This was the trend. So one day I went to see Alan Watts. He was at UCLA. I was going to UCLA, and he gave a lecture at Royce Hall in And I went to see him speak. Sure enough, at the end of the lecture, I couldn't understand a word he said. So I thought, I'm going to go meet this guy. So I went back to the green room, you know, and they invited some people if they wanted the question. So I had some questions, so I went back to the green room. He's sitting there, and there was a small group of us, like maybe 6 or 8 people, you know, inquiring from him. And within 3 or 4 minutes, he brings out a flask from his coat pocket, and it was gin. And he starts swigging this gin and, you know, speculating, and swigging the gin, speculating. And in about a half an hour, the guy was like, he was soused, completely soused. And then I realized, I got a little realization that he helped me, like, go away from that, you know, type of person, you know, because I could understand, you know, no wonder I couldn't understand what the guy's talking about. He's completely, you know, intoxicated with himself. I just thought I'd put, yeah.
Can I throw something else
in? Yeah, sure.
That just made me remember one time when Baba Ramdas was talking somewhere. And maybe Vaish was there too, but there were a bunch of book distributors there. And somehow or other, Krishna gave us intelligence to say this. And so all these people were coming into the hall. And we said, yeah, Baba Ramdas is going to be talking today. And these are some of the mantras he's going to be chanting. He wants you to chant along. And we sold tons of Upanishads. Remember that? You were there, right?
Yeah, so that's Pushpitam Bacham, flowery words. They sound good, but you can't understand what they mean, you know? Okay. Yeah.
It's interesting that, you know, that we usually think of Vedavada Ratas as people who are doing these particular Vedic sacrifices so that people can achieve, you know, higher birth and enjoyment in the heavenly planets and things like that, according to the Vedas. But then here, especially in the purport in the Isha Upanishad, Srila Prabhupada is also bringing in modern scientists who are also just, like you've been saying recently, you know, they're really like the blacksmith, you know, yes. Right? They're craftsmen. They're doing something to manipulate matter, but that's not knowledge as defined by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, what real knowledge is. And we have to kind of somehow in the intellectual history of European Western civilization or whatever, and the world civilization, you know, people would be sort of fighting over theology, scholastics and stuff, never coming to any end of any argument. And then some people came along and said, hey, we're discovering, you know, Newton's laws, or, you know, we're discovering laws of things that really work, and that, you know, in time and space we can, and things that everybody can see, and that and everybody said, oh, that's really knowledge. And it's become kind of the idea of what not, like even in the Bible, they say, you know, the truth will set you free. If you come to know the truth, it will set you free. You know, but that sense of knowledge has been lost now, the idea of knowledge as being a spiritual enlightenment. Yeah. And now knowledge is really just knowing how things work in a way, in the form of craftsmen doing things.
And it gets even worse when they get into atomic theory, which is like supposedly the highest kind of knowledge, because what they're doing is they're going deeper and deeper into matter, and they're getting more covered. The more they get into the subatomic particles, they're actually getting more and more covered, you know, and more deeper into matter. And they think they're going towards the truth, but they're actually going deeper and deeper into matter in a way that they're like completely lost, you know. It's like going deeper and deeper into a neighborhood that you don't know about. You just get, after a while, or forest, you get lost.
Prabhupada used to point out that real knowledge should solve the real problems of life, like death. Unless your knowledge can actually make you immortal, then what's the value of some knowledge that can make you enjoy a little while longer before you have to die? Yeah. Right.
Correct. Veda Radhatrata, supposed followers of the Vedas. Partha, O son of Prita. Na, never, anyat, anything, else, asti, there is, iti, thus, vadinaha, the advocates, kama, atmanaha, desires of sense gratification, svarga, padaha, aiming to achieve heavenly planets, janma, karma, pala, pradam, resulting in good birth and other fruitive reactions, kriya, vishesha, pompous ceremonies, bahulam, various, boga, in sense enjoyment, Aishwarya, and opulence, Gatim, progress, Prati, towards. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. So this is actually less dangerous. The desire for those last things is less dangerous than the philosophers who take it to the conclusion that neti neti, no, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, and end up with nothing. That's more dangerous. That's what each Upanishad purport is, verse and Prabhupada was explaining in the purport. The process of jnana, which ends up, you know, how does Prabhupada define that? By the elimination of the mundane, or the elimination of the
thousands of means,
end up with the conclusion that that they're nothing, or nothingness is the ultimate truth or goal. And that's the most dangerous thing. Why? Because that's spiritual suicide. It's the most dangerous thing. To kill oneself, atmahama, atmahana. What was that verse we read? The atmahama, killer of the soul, is very dangerous position.
We read that.
Didn't we read that recently? Yeah, we just read it, right.
I'm thinking of the Pashupna verse, and then... You know, it's like at the very beginning of the 10th canto, then Parikshit Maharaj says, who wouldn't be attracted to this except someone who kills himself?
Or an animal or right. oneself. Yeah. Animals or oneself. Yeah, that's the verse I was thinking of.
Isn't that what Krishna gives in Rinde? I'm talking about how the human body is like a boat that's sufficient to cross over. And then at the end, he also says, somebody who doesn't take advantage of it is a killer of the soul.
Yeah.
The one, this one is 10.1.4. It says, Nivritta Tarshayar Ubhimanam. Ubhoshita Shoshotramano Vibahamat. Uttama Shloka Gunanu Vada. Human Virajeta Vina Pashutna. Glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performed in the Parampara system. That is, it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord except a butcher or one who is killing his own self?
That goes back to what Kapila Dev said to Devahuti also. You have to do this for a long time. You have to hear this knowledge from proper sources very seriously and for a long, long time to actually come out.
The word pashu, which usually we think of as meaning...
We think the word pashu means animals, but it can also mean the self. And I think that's in this purport here. That so the Mayavadis are also pashukna.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. One thing that came to mind in reading the purport also is where Prabhupada talks about how a serpent with a jewel on its hood is even more dangerous. And a couple of things came to mind. First of all, the great, just remembering Prabhupada's mood and how much he was intent on defeating these demoniac conclusions of these science, so-called scientists in the Veda Vadaratas, and how the great travesty is that, you know, these people are not only, they're so bewildered themselves, but, you know, so many they're attracting so many innocent people. They're taking down, they're destroying the lives of so many people with them. And another thing came to mind is just where Srila Prabhupada talks about how a mathematical formula, when you start out with the wrong equation, at the end, you know, this big complex equation that may look really impressive is totally wrong. And so all the time and all the energy spent in calculating it is,
wasted time.
Is a waste of time, not only for the person to do, but for all the people who, you know, is like attracted thinking that there's some, you know, grand conclusion when it's actually all nescience.
Nice, very nice. So let's chant a little now. Yes, please. Another
comment. Maharaj, I had one question, unrelated. I was just meditating on one thing, like, anything Lord Krishna has prepared, even whatever small or large, it has a definite purpose in life. It has definite purpose, not life. It has definite purpose. And I was reading, the description of Golok Vrindavan. And it was said that it has, purpose trees where cows are, producing milk every time. The rivers are flowing with milk. All kinds of, things. So I was thinking when people are there at Golok Vrindavan, they don't desire anything like milk products, desire trees, to fulfill all their desires. Why are they there? Shall I repeat the question?
No, it's a clear question. Yeah, yeah. The question is extremely clear. They're there for sense gratification.
For Krishna?
To please the senses of Krishna. They're there to please the senses of Krishna.
So
what happens is all the living beings are there for the same reason. To please the senses of Krishna. And therefore, when you go to a desire tree, and you can ask for anything from the desire tree, and the desire tree will give it to you immediately. Why? Because he knows and he wants to please the senses of Krishna. And he knows that you want that thing only to please the senses of Krishna. Therefore, all facility is there for sense gratification to the unlimited extent that we cannot even imagine. And we're just... Prabhupada uses the example of a person who lost his car keys and he's on the ground, groping around on the ground, looking for. And a friend comes along and says, "Oh, what happened?" He says, "Oh, I lost my car keys and I have to get back quick because I have..." He says, "Oh, really? Can I help?" "Oh, yeah, sure, please." He said, "Where did you lose them?" "I left them about 500 yards down that way." And the person, his friend says, "What are you looking here for?" He said, "Well, there's a light here." There was no light down there. That is illusion. That is ignorance. Such a clear example. Simple and seems stupid, but it makes it very clear. We're just looking in the wrong place. We're looking in the darkness. We're thinking we're looking in light because the material energy is effulgent, it is attractive because it's also, and that's, I think, the verses in Gita will discuss this. Maybe we can stop here and then launch into that discussion when we get into the first part of the eighth chapter. Is that right? We're going to be in the first part of the eighth chapter
that's
of the
right.
Gita? Definitely. I think that fits right in. Flow of our thoughts will fit right in.